another episode of The Geek Whispers. You're here with Matt Brender.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And we are excited to have a friend of the show, a listener and first-time caller, who has just gone on one of the most exciting adventures in his career and certainly been a blast to watch socially. Keith, could you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Keith Townsend, formerly of Unemployedville. And happily employed in another, I think, 10 days.
That's fantastic. And that's partly why we wanted you here, Keith, because as we know, you quit your job seemingly abruptly and then went on this social journey to advertise yourself through your online online platform of virtualizedgeek.com. And it's been a crazy journey. Why don't we take a step back and look at that?
It's fortunate that my wife isn't down here listening to this episode being recorded, because she would curse you guys. Because it's funny, a lot of the bravery came from listening to this podcast. Actually, believe it or not.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's scary.
That's a lot of responsibilities. Sorry about that.
No, but seriously, I had planned to only spend a couple of years as a management consultant, and it is a for a lot of people is an extremely rewarding career. But when you find yourself as a traditional engineer, as many of the people that listen to the show are, and you find yourself in the room at 10 o'clock at night with five or six really smart people, and you're trying to figure out the right color blue for a PowerPoint presentation for the next morning, you get a little, you feel a certain way.
Yeah, you feel like you lost some of the context in which you you're going into that role. So you came from your very technical background, and for the last couple of years you've been in management consulting. What brought you that direction, Keith?
So, you know, if you look at kind of the, you guys talked about it on the show, plenty of people wrote about it. IT is changing. You know, either you're going to go into a DevOps type of role, you're going to go into traditional management role. But if you want a career path that kind of keeps you kind of stably employed, you have to pick up business skill. I went ahead and got my master's as an adult, but that's quite not enough. You know, you can, John will tell you that no amount of school can prepare you for the real life and real work. So I got the opportunity to become a management consultant, move back to the Midwest, and look at kind of these IT problems in a completely different light.
Other whispers, what are you feeling as you hear this journey so far?
I'm just glad Keith's wife hasn't killed us yet. I love the, and just so our viewers know, and we'll definitely link to this in the show notes. Keith, does all sorts of blogging, video blogging, et cetera. So one thing I love about your approach is your openness. You have just this great style of, it's very, very positive, but really candid and sort of, how would you say that served you in this search process?
You know what? One is therapeutic. I don't keep a personal blog, or personal log. So the posts are a little bit therapeutic. But more importantly, I like to let people know who I am before you even meet me. Yeah, we've all been in situations where we've started a job and we get to the job and either the employer felt like, oh, wow, we had no idea of who you were, or we had no idea of who they were. So in these interviews, my interview process, when I sat down with companies, it was to the point, hey, you know what? We know you. We feel like we know you already. Let's just talk about something other than you and your personality. Let's talk about the job.
That's really great advice, actually. I think people sometimes feel like they have to conceal something and reveal over time, but that's a really great approach of, if you cut through that, then you get to talk about some of the meatier stuff faster.
Yeah, and it's pretty interesting. For some of the technical jobs that I interviewed for, none of the jobs asked me any technical questions, almost none. It was, hey, you know what? We've seen the videos. We've seen the blog. We know what you can do technically. We kind of get a gist of your personality. Kind of let's cut to the meeting. And a lot of the really interesting opportunities, we were able to identify if there was mutual interest right off the bat.
That's nice. That's a you often hear about that kind of thing, but it's nice to hear that it's validated, that people actually did look at your blog and look at your videos, and it worked to get over that first initial meeting step. Rather than, I mean, the olden days, right? You'd Xerox 100 copies of your resume and start sticking them in envelopes, right? Hey, maybe you still did that. But
I didn't do that at all. You know, John, you make a pretty good point. Someone asked me earlier, what would you do if you interviewed with someone who didn't know about your blog? And I said, you know what, chances are I probably wouldn't take a job with them. This is not what this job search is about. If you haven't taken the time to Google me or research me, and I've already taken the time to do that, I think I'm at a career level, a career point, that mutual respect should be reciprocated. You know, I go on LinkedIn and I check out everyone I'm going to interview with, and I would expect that person to do the same for me.
I appreciate that. I think it's an important function of interviews that is sometimes lost, but is always like there's always an asterisk at the end of the advice for careers where it says, don't forget that as you're interviewing for a position, you're also interviewing that company, those people, for whether or not you'd like to work with them. And I appreciate that. Yeah, you're not hard to find online. None of us are, whether we like it or not these days. So it's important to know that they put in at least some effort, as much as even if it's, you know, less than your own.
Hey, guys, I'm really interested in the decision making process of this job change. I like how you looked at all the different possibilities of, you know, do you want to work for a vendor? Do you want to work for an end organization, end user organization? I'm really interested in how the job search changes as you get more senior and you're not just another kid who they're going to put on a plane, you know, and send around. But Keith, what's interesting also to me is that you're a management consultant. I don't know many people in management consulting. I know a lot of consultants. I know a lot of technologists. I know a lot of pre-sales and post-sales people on the vendor side. I know a lot of operators and architects on the customer side. How did you, tell us a little bit about management consulting, other than the fact that you had to make a lot of PowerPoints. How did you get there?
So, you know, John, you make a pretty interesting point. I think we talked offline a while back ago. The two worlds don't touch much, even though I was on a huge project with traditional technology companies. The two worlds really do not interact much. I kind of planned out my career from I wanted to learn how to be a proper engineer, not, you know, kind of the stuff that some of the pseudo engineering we do in IT. But I went to Lockheed Martin, spent a couple of years at Lockheed Martin, said, you know what, I wanted to learn how to be an engineer. So I spent time learning and training how to be an engineer at Lockheed Martin. Then I saw an obvious gap in my skill set, and that was on the business side. So I said, you know what? What are my options for coming up to speed quickly as a someone with authority within this business side of IT? And I did a little bit of research, and I'm like, you know what? Management consultants look like they solve some really complex problems. And I specifically set out to go to work for a Big Four so that I can fill that gap.
I really love that. Okay, so this gets me into – I'm going to jump around a little bit. Have you always been so deliberate in your career? Is this how you think and how you've done this, or were you surprised – like you woke up one day and you're here, you sort of put things on end to end.
Now, the part of it, I would like to say that all of it is planned exactly in gifts, is that I'm a big picture guy. You know, I can look at the arc of my entire career and say, you know what, over my entire career, this is what I would like to do. And here are some of the things I'd like to do within that. And engineering was one. business side of IT was another, and then eventually the CTO type of role and what type of things I'd have to do to get to those. So even as I'm taking this next position, I'm kind of mapping out the next 5 to 10 years things that I would like to do.
Was management consulting what you expected?
No. I got to be honest with you. No. Not know in a negative way. It's one of those things, you don't know what you don't know. And management consulting opened up a whole different side of life for me. I didn't really understand the drivers. I thought I understood the drivers behind business decisions. I thought I was a pretty bright guy. But when you get into a room with senior vice presidents of Fortune 50 companies and you look at the challenges that they're trying to solve, and you look at the rationale of how they're trying to solve those problems and the data that they need to support those decisions. And that's what a management consultant basically does, is provide those data points, help make really complex problems. You know, I tease the PowerPoint thing, but there's no better tool to make a really complex problem easier to absorb than a PowerPoint. And I didn't understand kind of what that really meant from a day-to-day perspective.
I was going to ask, can you give us a little bit, I know every day is different, but could you give us a little bit of a day in the life so that people who are thinking about that path?
So the day in the life begins the night before. Normally, you're preparing some type of slide deck. It wouldn't be a surprise to say that, you know, every maybe 4 nights a week, you're working on a slide deck for some type of presentation the next day, whether it's your senior leadership team presenting to the client or the client's senior leadership team presenting to some internal client. So you're spending a lot of time doing some type of data analysis and aggregation of data, taking your knowledge as an engineer, whatever your subject matter expertise is, and adding some value add on top of that data so that the next day the client can glean whatever they're trying to do. And then we still do a lot of the things that we traditionally do in tech consulting. So a lot of maturity analysis, a lot of assessments. So that stuff still happens, but the majority of it is taking really complex kind of sets of data, whittling it down to 5 or 6 pages, and walking through executives and senior management, understand the context of the summaries and delivering that message.
Yeah, I know a lot of engineers, and I can tell you that a very small portion of them would find that to be like a job that they'd appreciate for more than a day.
What, Matt, they'd rather be arguing about storage I.O. protocols and stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely. Or like whether Fibre Channel or iSCSI, or whether containers are going to take over versus virtual machines, or some other technical, you know, if then or that.
I'm making a groan sound. That's why techies don't get taken seriously.
Here's a serious argument that we would have. While the techies are arguing, do we buy 3 VMAXs or do we buy 3 Hitachi HDSs?
Mm-hmm.
The argument we're making is, or the conversation we're having with the executive team is, should we fire all of these guys and outsource to HP?
Wow. Yep. I think everyone just had the aha moment.
And what was that? How do you even train? How did you lead into that? I guess I'm asking one more sort of step back. Like, was this a learn on the job? I mean, was this sort of like you got there and you're like, holy cow, this is really different than I thought it would be? And you just had to learn by doing? Like,
just what the hell, man? Seriously, what the hell? What the hell?
So management consulting companies are really good at recruiting. They're really good at being able to find 3,000 guys just like Keith. So guys who can look at a large problem, get past the, you know, the should we use iSCSI or Fibre Channel over Ethernet, and get to, you know what, why do we all have jobs? And if you can articulate why you're at your job and to begin with, you know, to sidetrack, one of the interview questions I always ask my interviewer is, how does my role directly affect the end user or the customer? So if I'm going to a highway safety company and they create crash cushions, my question to my, you know, director of operations of IT is, how does my job help save the lives of our customers? And if you can make that connection, you have the aptitude to be a management consultant. If you can't make that connection, then you probably want to get deeper into your CCIE studies.
Well said. Well said. Wow. Well,
hey, so final, maybe a final business advice, Keith, for a techie who doesn't have an MBA, but who has aspirations to, say, be a CIO one day, do you have any advice for them on getting more in tune with the business needs?
Yeah, I would most definitely recommend going into doing a I would call it a tour duty, doing a tour duty on the business side of IT, not necessarily IT, but on the business side. So whether it's becoming a business analyst, you're going to have to leave IT for a couple of years, which caused challenges in my own search. But you're going to have to leave IT for a couple of years.
And I love your concept there that you should have to do a tour of duty to get that balanced approach. Any tips for how you keep your technical acumen sharp? How do you keep your tech skills sharp while you're looking across the fence and learning those other skills?
So this is an important point. I love that question, Amy, because one of the things that I learned, obviously, I still do videos. I still do blogging. So that's obviously one thing that you can, if you're a blogger, keep blogging tech stuff, keep doing tech stuff. Don't dismantle your lab. One of the things that I found as I returned back into a technical role is that especially vendors, they love the management consulting experience. They hate that I haven't deployed OpenStack in the past 3 months. So it's important to, if you're going to become a management consultant, what little time you have on the side, you need to spend that time in your lab.
I love it. There you go.
Yeah, tough love recommendation right there.
I was going to say the Keith Townsend boot camp for a career path.
As my mom once said, life is tough. What are you going to do? Die.
Or where are you going to find the extra hours in the day?
Yeah. On that one, let's get back to the search because you did this tour of duty. It sounds like you learned quite a great deal out of it, more than you certainly could have anticipated. And then one day you announce on Twitter that you're quitting and you're looking for a new job. What made you go to social first? I know you mentioned Geek Whispers was a factor, and wow, I haven't even wrapped my head around that yet because that's a lot of responsibility. But that aside, like, what in your career progression gave you that confidence? Like, this is the right step.
So I think the Geek Whispers helped validate a lot of the things that I was thinking. You guys do a really great job of articulating concepts like social selling and the business decision buying process and how that process. John talks a lot about how that process is already settled, 70-80% of the way before they contact the vendor. So the thought process was, well, why isn't that how is that any different from the job search? People know me on Twitter, whether it's from casual stuff or my blog post. People know me already. How do I leverage that was kind of the thought process.
Parallel is the great word for it. We always talk about personal brand. We always talk about, the image that you've got out there. But I love that connection. Again, your management consultancy big picture brain is serving us again, Keith, to see that connection of you've already halfway sold yourself. We always talk about, it's easier to get hired into a network you've already built, but it's just, again, I'm having that moment, that eureka light bulb goes off. You're totally right. You're halfway done before you even start.
Yeah, and I think my search was validated, at least early on it was validated. When people started to kind of retweet and tweet and share that I was looking, I got an awful lot of interest, probably more than I anticipated, and probably from sources I didn't anticipate. very early on. So the idea was validated. I don't know if I quite do it again the same way.
Well, the one of the challenges, I think, of your search, at least as I was following it, was that, you know, you're a fairly senior guy. You've got a lot of business experience now. When you just announce, hey, I'm looking for a new gig, I'm technical, I'm guessing that the immediate response, everyone's always looking for pre-sales and post-sales, vendor side, people who will jump on a plane and who can be, you know, selling architects. And I don't know, and I don't know what all the categories of jobs you are open to, but I bet you got a lot of opportunity right away of kind of hardcore quota carrying on the road jobs. Is that true?
Yeah, so a lot and on the road jobs, I don't mind. I think I need to, you know, harken back to the management consultant a little bit, is that I spent 80% of my time on the road. In 2013, I traveled 42 weeks out of the year, Monday through Thursday. So that part of the job, I don't mind. Anything in tech would be at least half of that. What I was surprised, to your point, John, was a lot of the opportunities were extremely technical and were frankly not a great match for me. Tech companies kind of don't know what to do with my skill set.
Preach.
Testify.
No. So what do you mean by that? Can we what do you think the, I mean, you've had some time to think about this. So what is one of the points that you can pull out of that?
So, you know, while I'm preaching the accolade of getting business skill, if you look back at tech companies specifically, you know, tech companies have quotas. They're engineering companies. While they would like to say they understand the business problems, they don't. just plain and simple. If they did, PwC, Ernst & Young, KPMG, those guys wouldn't have jobs. Tech companies would like to say they understand the business problem, but they don't. When I interview with some fairly senior people, and I'm like, you guys are talking about the problem specifically from the technology perspective. And when I talk to C-level guys, they don't talk about technologies at all. And when you try to inject management consulting culture into a tech company, my experience over the past 3 months wasn't very good. I can give an example if you guys like.
Sure.
Well, I'm all ears.
So I interviewed one of the opportunities from Twitter was one of the biggest names in kind of OpenStack on Twitter, at least, referred me to a job at one of the major vendors. I'll at least say one of the three of you worked there at some point in your career.
That was so big and unexpected. Okay. Yeah. No, go
so
for it.
Take your pick. So, it was an OpenStack strategist position. So extremely business-like position, going into companies, talking to CIOs, talking to architects, not necessarily about the technology, but about kind of the business challenges and the decisions on deploying OpenStack. Got to maybe the fourth or fifth interview, and the hiring manager came out and said, even though the technical guy who had the position recommended me to the hiring manager for the position, the hiring manager said, you know what, we really want somebody with OpenStack skill that can hit the ground running day one. With everyone else saying that, you know what, it would take Keith about 3 months to come up to speed and he has all this great business experience. I ran into that scenario at least three or four times during my search with tech companies.
Yeah. Wow. And with that much investment in it already, three or four interviews, that, I mean, for those that haven't interviewed recently, that's pretty serious. That's like,
yeah, it was like, yeah, you knew, I'm expecting this to be a checkpoint where we say, okay, we fly out and we meet each other and we kind of put this thing to rest and the bomb was dropped. Hey, this fifth interview, no. You're not what we're looking for technically.
You know, not to be a Debbie Downer myself, I've seen that happen before. Sometimes it's a symptom of big companies. Sometimes it's a symptom of recruiters who don't know what they're looking for or can't counsel people. I was trying to broker a job for somebody who, and it was a product management opening, but this person had been an architect, a chief architect, chief strategist, had so very kind of really interesting titles, but nowhere on the title did it say product manager. And so the team pushed back and said, well, you know, this person is not a product manager because the title didn't ever say product manager. And I'm like, no, wait a minute. This person drove the whole product strategy for this company. And they're like, nah, we don't really see it. So people sometimes get in these tunnel vision sorts of scenarios where they just want, they have a cookie cutter. And if you don't fit quite the cookie cutter, they don't quite understand you. But I guess that's part of the hunt, right? You've got to look a lot of places and see where the fit is.
Yeah, I think I may mention this in the blog post that the 3 months was equivalent from cost and education benefit, the equivalent of a master's certificate program for me. I learned a ton of stuff during that 3 months about vendors, about VARs, about the business models of these organizations, and a lot about the culture and kind of what I at the end of it, I came way clear what I wanted to do and what I didn't want to do.
That's amazing. And yeah, that sort of investment is phenomenal in understanding both the business and, you know, learning what you both do and don't want to do. That's pretty tough. Did you have any real humbling moments along the way? I think you anticipated, you mentioned a few times you anticipated about a 3 month cycle and you stuck to it. But I think 3 months, whether you plan for it or not, like you start feeling the wear and tear, I'm sure.
Yeah, I had more than a couple of humbling moments. I think one of the things, and I think, Matt, you might have either responded to this tweet when I made it, was that I likened myself to an engineer for a long time. And after 2 years of being a management consultant, I tweeted, you know what, my engineering days are behind me. Yeah. I wouldn't trust me to a keyboard and sudo rights if you paid me. I mean, that would not be a good look. And that's a hard pill to swallow, because a lot of the cool jobs, you know, when you're in this kind of blogger community, a lot of the cool jobs have to do with knowing deep technical expertise. If you visit the blog, I don't talk much deep tech anymore because I don't have that deep tech chops anymore. And that was hard to swallow. Knowing that I'm a seasoned professional and high level, and finding jobs at this level takes 3 months. When you go through 5 deep rounds of interviews in 6 weeks, which is what I did, and you don't get an offer, that's humbling.
Yeah, yeah.
It's heartbreaking to get beyond expertise, though. I mean, as anyone that listens to the show knows, I've gone through that here, guys. Like, to say that I'm into marketing and going to stay in marketing is to admit that you shouldn't trust me on a CLI or certainly in production whatsoever. And that's, I don't know, you have to see yourself differently. And humbling is a nice way to put it. A little, like, gut-wrenching is to put it a bit more bluntly.
What Keith is describing is somewhat a cumulative work experience that probably a challenge for somebody, you know, if somebody still enjoys that level, like it can be seen, certain kinds of technology probably are seen as a young person's game. So that can be challenging, or more so, like you said, a young man's game, which can be hard for women to break into it. But for anybody, and as Keith put it, for anybody searching for a senior level job, it's such a leap of faith, I think, because some of it is, you've jobbed yourself out. You've experienced yourself out of some of the entry level stuff, and you have to leap forward and up. And I don't know. I just appreciate your candor in sharing that. I think people always feel like, oh, you build up. It's not like 20 years ago where there's this natural, easy progression. I think we're all like rock climbers, right? We're all trying to find the next toe hole, and it's not clear always.
No, and sometimes. Yeah, go right ahead.
No, I was about to say, earlier in my career, at least, it was really easy to find a job and kind of demonstrate my skill. You know, I can get my CNE5, I can get my MCSC and NT4 role, and I can put that on a resume, leave a job Thursday, get a job on Monday. It was really easy because skill was extremely measurable, and there was a bunch of those jobs out there. We can get into a whole discussion of how those jobs are leaving. and how the market is the job market is changing altogether. But especially as you get higher up in the job career ladder, companies look for specific sets of skills, and matching your specific set of high level skills to job opportunities is a very difficult thing.
Wow, you struck me, Keith, when you said skill was extremely manageable in the past. I think if anyone feels like they're hitting a wall in their job search, or even feeling like a little bit of an identity crisis as they look at job openings, I think you hit it right there with that phrase. Previously, it was like, you're the Windows guy, you're the Unix guy, you're, you know, you're the Microsoft SQL gal. Like, you had these expertise, and that was enough. And now,
and you could keep it for a while, right?
Oh yeah, and it was, and it sustained for a long time. Thank you, John. Like that, and the longevity of it was huge. And I think with so much flux in the software stacks we're using, there's even more flux in that self of confidence of where you fit, and do I have to be technical to be a marketer these days? Like, that's a real question people have to ask.
So I think it's important to, you know, kind of bring this back to our early part of our conversation, is that when I talk as a management consultant and I'm talking to a CIO of a company, they could care less the skills inventory, the technical skills inventory of their engineering crew. At the bottom line, they're asked to provide a service to the business. If the people that they have in their organization can't provide that service, however it's provided, whether it's with an EMC array, Hitachi array, Amazon S3, CIOs don't care. They are being driven to be agile, and if your skill set can't provide that flexibility, you're in trouble. I'm going to be honest. I mean, I've had these conversations. I've talked to CIOs. I'm like, this guy is the best SQL guy I've ever met, and he was like, we don't need that skill, and I need to cut headcount, and I need to still provide services at the same level. He's out of here.
Yeah. Wow. So expertise is no longer guaranteed, but in a seat. That is that's great advice for anybody to take home. Other reflections, Geek Whispers, on this? I think we've gone through management consulting back to a rather public Twitter quitting. A lot of interesting topics.
Amy, anything?
Well, you know, my favorite question, I can't help but ask, of if you can spare any up-and-comer from one mistake anywhere on the line, what would be your advice? Take it from me. Don't ever do what?
That's a good laugh.
I've been in this thing for a couple of decades almost, and I think probably the best advice I would give anyone is don't be a cowboy, especially nowadays. If the worst kind of hand slap, I've done a lot of bad things. I've pulled out smart ass. I pulled out a drive in a drive array that I thought was RAID 5 and it was RAID 0. That wasn't the biggest mistake of my career. And it was the mail server. That wasn't the biggest mistake of my career. The biggest mistake of my career was I made a change. I came in one night to make a change. We all agreed upon a specific design. I got in. I'm like, you know what? That's the wrong design. I'm going to make a change to that design, implement the change, come in the next morning, and I got the worst ass chewing I've ever gotten in my professional career. My manager told me, he said, Keith, I don't care how smart you are, I don't care how right you are, but this is a team, and if you do something other than what the team decided, you have to include the team in that decision. Otherwise, you put all our jobs at jeopardy. Don't make that mistake.
Wow.
That actually speaks to some real DevOps-y stuff and some real cultural stuff. It's part of the role of I think, that IT brings to the table.
And I kind of like I think people have this conception of IT as this thing you go do in a box by yourself, and it's chock full of introverts. And that's a great sort of reflection in the span of your career, that what you came away with is exactly that. Don't be a cowboy, that it really isn't, you don't go it alone.
if you want to get to the highest levels within this profession, you have to learn to be able to depend on other team members and be a team member yourself.
Or honestly, I might even just revise that and say, if you want to keep your job these days.
That's
tough, though, guys, because we counsel people to be unicorns and like be outside the org chart and do all these exceptional linchpin-y kinds of things. But at the same time, don't break anything.
But not with a mail server. Not with the architecture. What we learned is you can do that with your blog, but not with the infrastructure.
I do hope we've offered some differentiation. What we're talking about is core infrastructure versus many of the tech marketing sides of the world that we discuss these days. So maybe we do need to continue to separate those to make it clear.
Yeah, I guess be a unicorn in terms of how you describe what you did to the mail server. Just don't pull this on the mail server with willy-nilly. Hey, Keith, in your search, you ended up not going with a tech vendor. And, you know, we talked, some of that was fit. But I actually think you turned some of those roles down because of fit on your side. And if I had to be an armchair psychologist, which I get to be because it's our podcast and I can do whatever I want. I actually
don't be a cowboy.
I think that my sense was one of the reasons you didn't end up at a vendor is you've been used to being a management consultant and kind of having to be kind of neutral and kind of being God and executive function. And at a vendor, you have to sign up for a side in an army, right? And you're definitely in that army. You're flying that flag. Everybody knows at the end of the day that you have to move units, even though you're a trusted advisor and you know, there's ways of doing it that are intellectually honest. At the end of the day, you're working for a company. Did that play into your decision-making process at all? And are you kind of happy you didn't end up at a vendor?
You know, absolutely, John. I think I absolutely love the power of my independence. When I'm at a Big Four, they preach independence all the time. But more importantly, before I left for management consultant, when I was in the decision making chair, I was a director at one point in my career. I always took vendor advice with a grain of salt, and that's always in the back of my mind. I love the fact that I can take pop. I'm a EMC elect. I'm a Cisco champion, and I'm a V expert, and I rail on all three companies. I love the ability to do that. I love the ability to, at the end of the day, people that consume my content know that the intent is to get the best available advice for their situation and not just my biases based on needing to make a quota.
And I would just like to point out that the geniuses who set up those programs really appreciate the free speakers like yourself, because it cannot be, you know, pure advocacy or it loses all of its punch. That's
can't be a cheerleader.
It can't. Oh my gosh, no sycophants.
I actually think you're in a very powerful position right now, Keith, because so when we were on the inside running these kind of programs, right, it's very difficult to find customers. A lot of the programs were partners, involved partner personnel. It's very hard to find customers, and it's very hard to find people with as we talked about, with business experience who can talk a high-level game. It's pretty easy to talk speeds and feeds and to get somebody to take a briefing on the new widget that you implemented or whatever, but do you actually now, and we like to talk about this at Geek Whispers, right? Because there's this side business of being a blogger, a voice. I don't know if you consider yourself a pundit, but you know, having this influence, whether that turns into money or direct money like book authors or speaking or not, or just influence, you're actually sitting in a really good position, I think, Keith. Because I hate to use the word unicorn, but you're kind of a unicorn. You're kind of unique.
Yeah, my teacher used to tell me that all the time in school. Keith, but she didn't use the word unicorn, Keith.
She's missing out.
She had other choice language.
Yeah, she had other choice language. But this harkens back to an earlier podcast that you guys did with Stu Miniman. over at Wikibon. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend folks go back and listen to that. That was most definitely a career option for me to go into the analyst seat, but that has you kind of get handcuffed in another way with that. You lose a little bit of your independent voice from outside of that platform. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you, John. The power that comes with independence and some authority behind that, the resume, Lockheed Martin, PwC, and such, leads a lot of credence to kind of my voice and the fact that I don't work for a specific vendor helps to give me a great voice. And then real money opportunities, too, which I would recommend that people go back and listen to your podcast, John, with Harold Martz back on back in your VMware days. That was an awesome listen to. That was one podcast I saved. I've listened to it four times. and I know Howard. I work with him. I know Howard, so that's funny.
Keith, it's a real privilege for us to be on the line with you today. I can't tell you how happy we are to know that Geek Whispers has been a part of your career progression, because it is a phenomenal progression. We're very happy to be able to follow it. For others that aren't following it yet, where are the best places to find you on the internet?
You can find me on virtualizedgeek.com is the blog. And then on the Twitters, I'm at virtualizedgeek.
Fantastic.
And I have to say, I have to go and just give you an extra shout. If you guys, listeners, aren't following Keith, you really should. We have all gotten to know him through these social channels and then in real life. And I love how you put it. It is like we know you a little better having seen all the stuff that you've done. I like your voice. I like your spirit. I like the attitude you approach it with. I think it gives you a shot in the arm. So thank you, Keith, for being out there and sharing your voice.
Well, thanks for fulfilling one of my dreams of being on a Geek Whisper. Guys, I'd be lying if I didn't say I deeply desired to be on the show.
All right, and with that, you have listened to the first of season two and one of many Geek Whisperers. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as Jay Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
Anybody who decides to quit their job, do not give their wife my Twitter handle, the blog post, nothing like that. It wasn't me.
It was us, and we take full credit. No.
We're glad to see you're gainfully employed.